Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. The seniors are back again. Jared Stansberry alongside Rob Gray. How you doing, Rob?
I love Mondays, and I love sitting here doing a podcast with you, so I am absolutely fantastic.
You really love Mondays?
Can I at least put on a front? Jeez, give me, what, 25 seconds into this, and I've, okay. Yeah, great to see you, man. Let's get this over with.
All right, Iowa State got some much-needed momentum with their 38-13 win over Kansas on Saturday. And for the brief time, all is happy in Cyclone Land, Cyclone Nation.
Yeah, at least, yeah. I mean, obviously everyone hopes it's not brief. But needed to get well in that game and in a lot of ways did, particularly in able to – Mike Warren backs up his performance with the freshman record, 175 yards. And as far as he's concerned, it's full speed ahead from here. He hasn't shown what he's truly capable of. And the line's gotten better. I don't think it's any coincidence that when Daniel Burton returns, you have these two breakout rushing games, at least by Iowa State standards, to get over that 200-yard mark, by most team standards, frankly, if you've rushed for over 200 yards. So a lot of good things. And the defense played great. Gave up, well, you know, the one touchdown on the basically the breakdown, an assignment there. Against, yeah, granted, a Kansas team, the one thing that they can do occasionally is mount some offense.
Right.
Especially on the ground, and they weren't able to do that. So they, very, very positive development, but now we get into teams that score 149 points a game, and this is where the proverbial rubber hits the road, to use a cliche.
I was actually more impressed. I mean, people were talking about Kansas potentially being the worst team in Big 12 history, and I believe it 100%. That defense was horrendous. But there were times when the offense showed that they actually do have some talent. I think that Cozart's actually a pretty talented little quarterback, and I think that they've got some receivers that can make some plays as
Parmley,
well.
Yeah.
And, I saw just a little bit ago on my way down here that Cozart's out indefinitely with a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
They're going to play that Ryan Willis that came in for a little bit. He's going to have to start this weekend at Baylor.
Oof, boy.
So as bad as things already were, I don't think they're going to get any better for the Jayhawks.
No, that's a – you almost somebody brought it up to me. You almost feel sorry for a team. And it's kind of crazy when you're covering a team that's won five games or if you're speaking from a fan base that's won five games the previous two seasons and now is 2-2 and thinks they ought to be at least 3-1. But boy, those guys, particularly on the defensive side, like you said, a couple guys could make plays there, but it looked like they're trying.
Mm-hmm.
And I can speak from experience, and I'm sure you can too, from some situation in life where you're putting forth your effort. You really, really are.
Right.
And you just know that. I played in it was more or less AAU. We put it together for one game. A bunch of misfits we were, just in Ames. We'd played like on a boys club team. We had a few guys that could shoot, like me, and I could occasionally. I had the lefty thing going,
right,
so I could do stuff.
The hook.
We ran into this team of Des Moines Metro All-Stars, and we played them. I remember I was really pleased with my line of 6 points and five rebounds. They beat us something like 146-51.
Wow.
And they weren't even really trying.
Yeah.
But they had guys 6'5 go down on the post. 6'5, 220. And there I am, 6'1, 170 maybe. Just, I'm going to stop this guy. I'm not, you know. So, but we really tried, you know.
Yeah.
We were just so outmatched. And it wasn't fun at all. It wasn't fun saying, hey, how do I match up against this guy? Hey, at least I got my little Kevin McHale move on him from the left side. But so you got a feel for that. And I think it's been touched on. Beatty's an enthusiastic guy. They need to give that guy time to build a program because it's not there for them, and they need to give him the resources. But until then, Iowa State needs to continue to feast on them and, of course, bite some of these teams like, you know, pretty good Texas Tech team, but the worst defense in the Big 12 starting this week.
Yeah, definitely. I think that Chris wrote this today, but they got Texas Tech at pretty much the perfect time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a little bit of momentum coming out of the bye week and then get the win over Kansas. And then Texas Tech, I mean, their schedule recently has been a gauntlet. You played Arkansas, you played TCU, you have to play Baylor. And they're, like Chris said, they're not very deep, you know. So go read that thing by Chris Williams that he posted earlier today, and you'll see that this is a good opportunity for Iowa State to maybe go down to Lubbock and get a win. And they've had some pretty good success against Texas Tech in the past.
They have. I mean, hearkening back to that game, Texas Tech was ranked, and Iowa State in 2011, Jared Barnett goes down there, and the offense torches them for 41. Huge rushing numbers. I mean, they've had really good success on the ground against Texas Tech in recent years. The biggest one, was it last season? They put a lot of yards on them on the ground.
Yeah, I know they put a lot of yards up on the ground.
Lost by a field goal. And so there's something about that matchup. That's apples and oranges. You know, you go back in the last 5 or 6 years, different head coaches, different staff. But this defense, I'm interested to see if it's bad, because the numbers are lying in this case, because you just did play TCU and Baylor. Now they're last in total defense, they're last in rushing defense, they're near the bottom in pass defense, scoring defense down the chart. But look at who your games are against. Mm-hmm. And Arkansas, while not great, you know, came back and won at Tennessee over the weekend. So they've got talent. They're just kind of putting it together after the losses to Toledo and the Red Raiders. So I see a defense. They got 9 takeaways. So I see a defense that probably likes to gamble. Mm-hmm. Their strength is probably speed, like everything else at Texas Tech. So as long as the offense stays within itself, executes the way that it should, you know, the rushing, 277 yards they're giving up. You know, you should be able to make hay with them, but you got to protect the football, which Iowa State is generally good at. Sam's 2 interceptions late against Kansas notwithstanding. So it does set up that way. I mean, they got to be beat up a little bit facing the caliber of athlete that Baylor and TCU possesses. So it does set up to be that time. That and let's face it, before, yes, everyone thought Iowa State would be 3-1 or possibly 4-0 at this point, but they looked at Texas Tech preseason and said, well, we did too. That's a game you can go and steal.
Right.
And if things click, probably better than they have in any game this season, to be honest, including payoffs. Toledo, they clicked pretty good, but you couldn't score. I think they've got a chance to go down there and steal that and keep the Red Raiders on their heels a little bit.
Say they do go down there and get a win. What's the mood of everybody? How's everybody feeling if they're able to go down to Texas Tech and win after 2 weeks ago, it was like the sun wasn't going to come up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mood would be, I mean, I think the mood is only slightly restored after putting it on Kansas, because that was fully expected. And it was, I know it was expected, quote unquote, mm-hmm. last season when Kansas thumped the Cyclones. But that was a different dynamic, a different team, a team that had elements of it, well documented, we've gone over it, that could pack it in at times.
Right.
Not everybody, but pieces. And this team doesn't seem to have that mentality at all, and they didn't seem to, you know, I know as fans, you know, you'd say, had to come out of the non-conference at least 2-1, or 3-0, had to, because look at what we've done in the Big 12. Well, I don't think players look at it that way at all. And you can look at it and say, man, Iowa State's never won more than 3 games in a nine-game Big 12 schedule, but those guys don't care. I mean, Jordan Harris almost laughed at it. You know,
right.
It's like, hey, we know what we should have done, but we didn't. Now here we go. We're going to take on Kansas. We're going to do these other, you know, just run through and see what happens. So I think the mood would measurably be higher, because then you're looking at fans that said, okay, we should have been at least 4-1 at this point. Well, we're 3-2, but look at what we did. We went and beat a team that is the third best offense in the Big 12 and can put up points. I think it's 50 points a game at this point. So a lot of I think, optimism would come from that. Obviously, it's a very tall order, mm-hmm. but I think doable if they play their best game to date.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how that how the defense holds up against a true air raid attack. We heard Paul Roach talk about it during his press conference this morning. When they were putting in this 3-4 defense, they were trying to figure out a way to match up better against this air raid offense that you see with Texas Tech, Baylor, TCU, et cetera. And this is really going to be the first time that we get to see it face that style of offense, you know? When the offense they played against Iowa, that's not what they were. Mm-hmm. Their scheme was set up to defend. They're not set up to defend a team that's going to line up in the I formation and pound it at you. The defense is about speed, and now it's going to be speed versus speed. And I'm really interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, me too. In fact, that's what I think I want to center my sort of game day preview around, because look, the defense has risen to third in the Big 12 in total defense. Now, just like for Texas Tech's defense, you have Kansas in there. Mm-hmm. But you also had two pretty good teams in Iowa and Toledo.
Teams.
Yeah,
two
now
ranked.
And you know, pretty decent FCS team that
right.
can generally move the football at least. But nonetheless, the stats are skewed that way. If you can put a dent in Tech's A, ability to score, and B, ability to grind you down with those quick, rapid-fire air raid drives again and again and again and again, you know, it reinforces that this 3-4 scheme was not just a wise move, but perhaps a brilliant move for this season to fit the personnel and everything else. So, yeah, it is that and the test for the running game, which hasn't strung together three or more 200-plus-yard games since 2009. So those are two big, I guess, ifs. But, I mean, boy, if you keep it clean, you know, the MO of these Wally Burnham defenses, if you keep them down enough that the offense has an opportunity, if they're able to mount drives and finish them, then I think you've seen the 3-4 switch validated.
But I think if you can see the defense go down and they prove that they're able to step up to the task, I guess, of facing an offense with such that's so high-powered, and then you're able to get a win, all of a sudden that game against TCU next week, based on the way that Texas Tech was able to play them down in Lubbock, you get TCU at home at night when you've got the fans with the potential to get pretty rowdy. You know, that's the kind of formula that brews upset. But I'm not calling it upset.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that if you got into that situation, that would seem a little bit more logical than it would have 2 weeks ago.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm certainly not either. I think TCU, I don't know. I think they have so much talent that all those guys that hadn't played before because of all the injuries on defense, and now they're sort of getting their legs. So they're, you know, they made a statement against Texas.
Oh, yeah.
A team that had been hanging around, and just couldn't get over the hump, and then just put it on them, beginning to end. I mean, Texas is not a good football team this year, but they still were in a position to win the previous week.
Do you think if it was up to them, they'd just quit the season and fire their coach and
get ready
for next year?
They sold a lot of tickets already. I guess the AD's still interim, so it wouldn't really matter, you know, if he ended up being fired too. They probably got to the university president too, you know. But it's a fair suggestion, because it is. I mean, it's a lost season for them,
right.
Obviously. And but nonetheless, I do think that this defense is equipped. Again, if they're executing sound, and again, the stat that blew me away is Tech has attempted 221 passes, most in the Big 12. Mahomes, the leader, sacked one time.
Wow.
You know, talk about what it means for the defensive numbers to have played TCU and Baylor, two of the best offenses in the country and the top two in the Big 12. But what to say about the offense?
Right.
That they faced the types of D-lines that, yes, TCU's banged up at the type of athlete they have, Baylor, the Oakmans, everyone, you know, that can really pressure you, can really dominate the line of scrimmage. They've given up one sack to 221 pass attempts. And that's just staggering.
Yeah.
So it seems to be a game in which, you know, you certainly don't sell out for the sack. You drop back in coverage. You try to pick off a pass here and there. You see what kind of moves, you know, the Pearsons, the improvement in Justin Thomas, mm-hmm. DeMond Tucker, you know, thrusting through the middle. Can accomplish, but really, really intriguing matchup to look at it that way. To see, I mean, I don't think it matters. I don't know how many sacks they had against Toledo. At most, it was one. And they might not have had any. They just really covered well and reacted, read things on the run game, but for the couple of really big runs by Hunt. So might be similar game plan to that, where don't be looking for, you know, a new celebration per Dale Pearson sack necessarily, but enough pressure that can maybe get Mahomes, who I think he's 14-5 or something in touchdowns to interceptions. So he can, if you get him a little happy feet, he can let it sail on him a little bit. So be interesting to see what the game plan is and obviously how well it's executed.
It's just so hard to get back there and sack the quarterback against Texas Tech. It pretty much always has been because of the way they run their offense. They're such short throws, you know, a lot of throwing it out into the flats and stuff like that. And you don't see them very often where Mahomes backs up to pass and he's standing back there for 3, 4, 5 seconds. He's getting that ball and he's getting it out of his hands as fast as he can.
Sure, because they've usually had at least a pretty good, particularly pass-blocking offensive line as well. I mean, because teams get it out with almost, you know, more than half the teams in the Big 12 are tempo, getting it out quick. Yeah. And all that stuff. But nonetheless, teams with the elite pass rushes would still, when they thump Tech, put the quarterback on the ground quite a bit. It's all about the disruption initially and then the ripple effect from there. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, because their passing game has been so productive, you know, even in down years for them, which they've had a number of recently, it would be interesting to see what their sack totals given up have been the last few years, because – I'm sure it's more than 2.5 per year, but you know, when you're that proficient of an offense in the passing game, it's going to be hard to get to the guy. You just got to hope for hurries. You got to hope for, you know, the miscue created just by that little bit of pressure you're able to bring.
I'm going to find out their how many sacks they've given up.
We also had a few fine
we had some
listeners.
Questions.
Chime in with some questions for us.
Yeah, I'll pull those up too.
Travis, fellow Cardinals fan for you.
He's a smart man. Jared Leeper's a Cardinals fan as well. Smart people.
Also very smart. And then we have Ted Flint.
Yeah, and we all know
Cubs fan, so very smart.
And, well, no, we won't talk about that.
Let's just say they're all smart. Perhaps not in their choice of favorite baseball team, but.
I guess I can't talk. I've got a Yankee shirt on today.
Yep. Hey, you're a senior.
Yeah.
Different kind of senior.
I'm just
get a nice shirt. Like, it's a nice looking shirt.
I got it
I'm also
on my
Red
trip.
Sox fan too, though. So I look at it, and my eyes are just a little almost burning.
I got it on my trip this summer, though. But see, that's why I got it. It just helps me remember all the good times with my dad.
Absolutely.
I don't care about the Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's a good thing. It's an iconic team.
Right.
I mean, good Lord. I mean, I'm not gonna kill you for it.
All right, so these questions. This one, first one from Travis. Do you think the reports were true in Hinesgate? I personally do, but Fred didn't want controversy at his old job.
Do you want me to go first, or would you like to offer your take?
You can go first.
You know, I don't know, but I've talked to people enough that there is obviously some truth.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. Now, what people will bicker about is how much. And I think at this point, that's kind of moot. I think from a certain perspective, which those many unnamed sources provided, they're 100% true. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, very, very damaging in that regard. I think from another perspective, they're somewhat true.
Yeah.
And it all depends on which, I guess, side of it you land. I don't want to make it seem that simple because I think there's more than one side. And I'm not saying that Travis was taking a side.
Right.
He was conveying things that he'd worked a long time to get out of people that obviously didn't want to be named because of, I don't know, possible repercussions of some sort or whatever. Common practice when you're dealing with information that or allegations that are sensitive. I think so to sum it up, yeah, I think I don't think in that situation anything could be 100% true.
Right.
because there are intimations there. And the one that just jumped out at everybody was the one quote from the one source that I'm not so sure that Fred would have left. That's more than anything that was reported in there, which I know Travis put a lot of time and work into, and kudos to him for that. That's the one that got to people.
Right.
Right? I mean, I'd say 90% of it. Just people can look at, okay, Hawaii, book a night. And then you can dive in and say how many teams do go ahead and book an extra night when you're flying out that very night. I mean, and all that. I mean, I think virtually anyone can live with that. I mean, we heard what Fred said on KXNO that, oh my gosh, I got to find 5 hours to do something in Hawaii. I mean, what, poor me or something, you know, to paraphrase to a degree. But I mean, look, Travis is too good a reporter to not have been on to something.
Right.
In trusting these people, clearly there's at least some truth there and a varying degree of truth again, but based on how you view the whole situation of how Fred came to exit. I mean, I don't think anyone would legitimately argue, and I don't think the story said immediately after that quote, okay, Fred had made it clear that he's wanted to coach in the NBA, and then this dream job opportunity opens up, so it's, you know, speculation. They soften that quote, but that quote can't be softened in some people's minds. So I just think it's, as I said, it's some truth, and it's sort of up to everyone subjectively to figure out or to, you know, predetermine or determine based on what evidence is available how much truth was there.
It's just so hard to build a story on unnamed sources.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things you learn in journalism school is that if you're going to really break something, you got to get somebody to talk with you on the record, you know? And you're just, I feel bad for Travis because by having the unnamed sources, it pretty much just put his reputation on the line. Yeah. His name was the only one that was attached to it. So then when, you know, Jamie Pollard goes on the radio and Fred goes on the radio, it seems like everybody's just attacking Travis, which I don't think is what they were really doing.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the fact that Travis's name was the only one that was attached to it, there's nobody else to point the finger at, I guess.
Yeah, that's the price you pay. I mean, when there's a byline and there's unnamed sources, it doesn't matter how many.
Right.
It's not an unassailable story. I mean, it's not unassailable even if a named source. I mean, all the questions, why didn't Pollard speak on the when they approached him and all of that. And that can get into, you know, look, we're not in everybody's head, and I don't like to speculate why people do things. It certainly would have, I would think, altered the story significantly.
Yeah.
And it may have. I mean, if I put my editor hat on, which I'm not qualified to do, as I've never been one, but nonetheless, hey, everyone opines about things. Well, sort of. But everyone opines about things that they're not, you know. Like the bad sports, or the coaching. I mean, they haven't coached, you know, or the player needs, you know, yada, yada, yada. But I would say that it would give me pause going forward with the story if Pollard said, run through all these things, and I'll give my response to each one of them.
Right.
And if every single one he's refuting it emphatically, and in ways that make sense, it's not just na, 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 na.
Mm-hmm.
That would make, you know, at least make me think, okay. Then you weigh how important is it to get this side out there. You might say, okay, we're going to take some hits for this. But this stuff was really felt by some people.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, whatever you might have had, and it might have not. You can also say, look, we went ahead and went with it because this is definitely reflecting reality. In a way, and from a certain perspective, it's reflecting it in a very important way, and that people should know that that's out there. So it's a call I wouldn't want to make, and I think there, you know, I don't think there's any problem with going in with it. I think it could have been headed off at the pass, but I mean, again, people have their reasons for why they. They want to put themselves on the record in a situation or why they don't. So it's just a tough deal all around, and I think your point is a great one, circling back to that about how you're putting yourself out on the line, out on a limb there when it's nothing but unnamed sources, no matter You know who those sources are. Obviously, you're not going to betray those sources. So it's just you, and then the criticism gets redirected from where it was right onto you. So,
all right, we'll move on to the next question from Mr. Ted Flint, the famous Ted Flint. On average, how often do you plug McKay's tweets into Google to see if they are song lyrics?
Oh, you want me to go first again?
Yeah, just go ahead.
Zero. Now, that's an interesting thing, too, because there were those...
cryptic tweets.
Yeah, that occurred in
I don't know. I've never heard those songs.
I know. My friend. And you'd be listening. I mean, I'm passe.
Believe him. I mean, I'll take Jermail for his word. But you know what? Like I said, I've never heard those songs.
Maybe he's like searches out indie artists, and he just wants to discover them, and he's a real connoisseur.
All I know is he's a big fan of Meek Mill. You know who Meek Mill is?
I've heard of Meek Mill.
You've heard about the Meek Mill, Drake beef, right?
I definitely heard about that.
Yeah.
So
have Meek you ever been in a beef, a rap beef?
Not really, no. I did have, old school, I was around when rap essentially came out.
Yeah.
So I had all the early Run DMC. I had go back and kick it old school with Houdini and Slick Rick. Lots of others. I mean, Big Daddy Kane. I mean, so I always enjoyed the genre. Obviously, it's changed. And as you get older, you get set in your ways. Mm-hmm. Studies have shown this. At a certain age, people stop listening to new music, sort of. I mean, or they look for music that echoes the music that they grew up with.
Right.
So somebody's sort of doing something in a retro feel. Not really beef. No. How about you?
No, I can't say I've ever been in a rap beef, I guess.
See, but you're up on the new stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I give you credit for that. I mean, when I got into rap, I was probably looking at people that liked, I didn't want to say what type of music it was, but, you know, something like, how lame are you? This stuff is coming up. I mean, it's bubbling up.
Yeah.
You haven't heard of Curtis Blow? What's your problem? You know, but that's a good idea by Ted. Ted often has some very, very, very good ideas, and might be a worthwhile thing to try, particularly if we ever put together our unrated.
Yes. It's going to happen. Pay-per-view.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we can pull that off.
Well, no, I don't think we can pull that off.
Ted might. Just his presence might be able to.
Well, I might probably. I would be willing to say that would be the most listened to podcast in the history of Cyclone Fanatic.
That could be. Certainly, I could say without doubt that it would be probably for the seniors podcast.
Oh, yes.
But Ted's a celebrity that way.
He's a bigger celebrity than we are.
Oh, no question about that.
From Jared Leeper, anyway, ISU can hold Knicks three opponents to under 130 points total. 130 divided by...
It's like 43.3.
Yeah, 43.3. So 43.3 points per game. Texas Tech, TCU, and Baylor.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Mm-mm. I think it could be close. I just don't see how they hold Baylor under.
I could 65. See
65. I mean, I could see him being in that range. Like maybe you can keep Tech in the low 30s. Maybe TCU is the high 30s. But I don't. Baylor's 50 plus in my book. No matter what. I mean, they put that in about everybody.
And it's on the road.
Yeah.
It's so hard to play in Waco. Mm-hmm. So hard to play in Waco. It was hard to play in Waco even when they were bad.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I mean, look, even if they don't, it doesn't mean that the defense played poorly either.
Right.
That's the thing that I think the defense has been beyond a pleasant surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this season, I think it will continue to get better. But some of those games, you know, and obviously it's not only the offense scoring points on you too. It could be the special teams deal. It could be a pick six or a scoop and score fumble situation. But I stand by liking this defense, but I have a hard time believing that average. And Baylor would be the outlier, the upward outlier there. I think they could be in the ballpark there. And maybe just below it. And who knows, maybe they hold these teams to 10, 14-28. But imagine the mood then.
Oh my gosh, that'd be something.
It's at this point, based on who they played and what these teams on offense have shown, I think they could be right around that line, and you'd feel you might have a pretty good chance in at least one and maybe a couple of those games.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say it's not gonna happen. Sorry, Jared. You have an awesome name. You're a Cardinals fan, but I just don't see it in the cards for the Cyclones to hold the next three teams below 130. That's tough.
Yeah,
I'm not even sure that some very good defenses could do that.
Well, exactly, and that's the point. Particularly when you look at Baylor on the road. I mean, that's a number where it was pick a number a couple of years ago, and obviously a different dynamic. This defense is better.
Right.
Better defense, at least, than they've had since 2012. Markedly better. Leaps and bounds better. But it is a great question. And I guess whether they do or whether they don't will tell a lot as they try to, climb into that upper division of the Big 12.
You want to hear about how stupid I am?
I never tire of hearing that.
Yesterday, I got a text from my buddy, and he said, when Iowa finishes the season as undefeated national champs, I'll get tattoos of it all over my body. My reply was, so will I.
Ooh. Well, you're asserting that it won't happen, but that's the schedule. And Iowa's pretty darn good.
That defense. Yeah, when I first heard it, the original thought of it sounded so ridiculous that my snarkiness could just not stay out of the way, you know? But as I thought about it more, I was just wondering, what the hell have I just done to myself?
Well, first of all, it's important to be a man of your word.
Yeah.
Second of all, it's not important to be a man of your word when it comes to something like that.
This would probably go right up there with Chris and his Scott Drew tattoo. This would be worse.
It would be all over the all over, though. I mean,
I feel like we could come to some kind of resolution that I would only have to get one.
Yeah, and it could be like Chris's compromise on the Avatar. It could be like a Southern Miss.
Yeah.
Like Avatar, you know, a little bit less obvious, straight up Tiger Hawk. But look, that team, better than I thought they
were. Right. Definitely.
And that's a team of gamers. I mean, Iowa State was right there and had a chance. And, you know, even 2 minutes to go before they, Desmond King and all that. And then, all that went down, obviously, within the final couple minutes of the game. And Iowa's done nothing but back it up. I know Wisconsin can certainly look at mistakes, fumbling at the 1 yard line, et cetera, but it's really hard to win at Camp Randall. And Iowa went in and did it. We've talked too much Iowa here, so let's turn the page. And by the way, I very rarely heard about how stupid you are. That's why I never tire of hearing about it.
Yeah.
I hear about it myself all the time, so I'm definitely tired of that.
There was lots of other stuff that went around college football this weekend. Did you get much of a chance to watch any after the Iowa State got done?
Decent amount.
It was a pretty crazy weekend. Everything kind of got turned upside down.
I was pleased that my, not exactly bold, but my belief that Alabama would come back with a vengeance, not because they're an underdog, but because Georgia always start either it begins the season as a trendy national championship type team and then stumbles and it still ends up like winning 9 games. The mid stretch or something for them always is a problem. And as good a back as Georgia has, why am I blanking out his name? It was
Nick
Gurley
Chubb.
Before. Yeah, Chubb. How could I forget the name and the freaking picks that I said? What an awesome name, and as well as a great back, Nick Chubb. I was thinking of Gurley because he had such a nice game and smart game for the Rams yesterday, and they're upset, I suppose. But just figured they'd stumble. And Alabama's so proud, and they hardly ever have to have a chip on their shoulder, and they had to.
Right.
Don't underestimate the value of those, whether you have one on all the time or whether it's just once every 73 games.
I picked Georgia to win the game, but I made my selections after the Cyclone Fanatic tip-off party Thursday evening.
Mm.
So I'll blame my
Bush Light.
Yeah, my poor selections on the Bush Light.
That's fair. Hey, Kirk, excuses. We're good at excuses
Kirk,
around
Kirk
here.
Kirk sent us an email in the middle of the day saying, don't wait until after the party to make your picks.
That was
exactly what I did.
You did not heed it as well. Well, you're a rebel. See, it goes with our renegade nature in this podcast. You just said, oh, yeah? Well, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll make my picks after. I don't think you had that bad a week overall, though.
No, I was okay. I've overtaken Adam Gray for second to last. So he, as long as I'm not sitting on the bottom of the heap, I'm fine. You won't hear me complain.
I ended up there last year. I don't know how many times I woke up with cold sweats, really, really dismayed that I was down there. So yeah, definitely want to avoid that.
There was another thing I wanted to bounce off of you, and I told you that I had some thoughts to get off my chest when we were talking about the seniors yesterday. We've got like 10 more minutes.
Yeah.
I think Nebraska is irrelevant. They've slipped into irrelevancy. They tried so hard for so long. You know, you switch from Bill Callahan, you could see it getting there, and then you bring back Bo, and it seemed like everything was trending back upwards again. And obviously now with Mike Riley. On Saturday, I was watching the game, and it used to be that when Nebraska was playing, if they were losing especially, you know, Twitter was ablaze with people talking about Nebraska and people talking about Nebraska. Nobody cares about Nebraska anymore. And that was kind of the moment when I realized it's like, wow, like this is how far this program has slipped to where no one even cares about the fact that they just lost to Illinois.
Now, as a lifelong 21-year-old fan of the team, I'm sure it started to dawn. Well, it's dawned on you in bits and pieces over the last number of years. But to hit this kind of rock bottom, I mean, you must have had at least a couple nights waking up like I was when I lost CF picks in my first season. You know, my rookie season fell flat on my face. Now, it's not a personal failing, but it's a team that you grew up rooting for. And
right.
Well, and has a storied tradition.
Yeah. It's just like I'm kind of at the point where I'm just like I'm bitter about it because it seemed like things were so positive, but I'm kind of at a point where like looking back on it, it's almost like Bo Pelini didn't do anything for 3 years. I mean, they just don't have any talent. I mean, they have some, but I will honestly say that I think Iowa State is a more talented team than Nebraska is.
That's saying something.
Especially on the defensive side of the ball. They're just more athletic. Nebraska's just got – they've got big, slow guys. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't make any sense to me how they were able to recruit so poorly for so long. It's like they didn't even put any effort into recruiting. And, I mean, I'm sure that's not the case, but Nebraska is irrelevant at this point. And it's – I tried to get that out there. I haven't heard anybody even talking about Nebraska.
Well, if it's any solace, which I'm sure it isn't. Every team has done that.
Yeah.
Every single team. I mean, the glory days, and for some, in select programs, fan bases, of every year, we're going to be winning almost every game, if not every game, like Nebraska had. Like for a good share of time, Florida State had. Penn State used to have that.
Miami.
Florida, Miami, Notre Dame. You could SC at times in the past. I mean, you can go back to a time with a lot of these programs where there was a long stretch where they were always really, 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 really good.
Mm-hmm.
Or a national championship contender, you know, in the smattering of those years. Or many of them. All those programs fell on hard. Alabama.
Yeah.
Howard Schnellenberger, and they went through some years. Who was it? Mike Shula.
Yeah.
So every single program has done it now, and that's obviously a function of, you know, NCAA changing some of the rules. You know, you certainly don't have as many scholarships as you used to. Guys are less concerned and less enthralled, I guess, with the idea, concept of being a part of a program and waiting until their senior season to have an impact, or maybe not have an impact at all. You just wanted to say you were part of Nebraska's team or Notre Dame's, whereas you could go and make an impact at, you know, the Central Florida or other places. I mean, heck, Ohio State, Michigan, other things we can bring in here if how they've gone down.
Yeah.
And nothing's a given anymore. And, you know, parity arrived for some programs more than others. And it's not going to go back
right.
for anybody. I mean, Alabama's probably as close to it to being that dynasty as anybody else is, although Ohio State's starting to be again, but that's just last season.
Mm-hmm.
Where fan base might, for several years, think we shouldn't lose a game.
Right.
It will rightly think, maybe, that they shouldn't lose a game. So you got a lot of company, and I think it's just, it ain't coming back.
Yeah.
It's not coming back for anybody.
And it's like, it just seems like it was so long ago now that there was so much optimism. Like, Ndamukong Suh's senior year, Nebraska's got all the way up into the top 10
mm-hmm.
for a period of time. Even the next year, they were up into the top 10 for a period of time. Everything, the future seemed so bright back in 2009 and 2010. And now here we are in 2015, and 21-year-old Jared is ready to throw in the towel. I'm sick of it.
You never give up on your team.
No.
You just have to change your perspective.
And I know when Saturday comes, I'll be ready to watch them, and I'll be ready to be angry when they're done. But it's tough. It's tough. I never knew how Iowa State fans felt to not.
You still don't.
No. Well, I mean, I know,
but at the same time, to have gone through decade upon decade of futility, and then you get a glimmer, and then, you know, you go back to Donnie Duncan, Johnny Majors had some years, and then you go through, really dark days, and then McCartney, it took a long time, and they build up to that 9-win season, and a few other bowl games, and you get these guys like Troy Davis, Seneca Wallace, I mean, some real studs in there, and then tail end of McCartney goes down. Fans stop showing up.
Yeah.
It's going to work in ebbs and flows. And the built-in advantages in places particularly like, look, climate is still an advantage for teams. And that doesn't mean some teams in certain climates aren't going to stink. So players are looking for a successful place. They're looking for places to launch something beyond. And Nebraska is not cold. In a lot of ways, it's very similar from that perspective to Iowa State, except for the, of course, huge, 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 huge winning tradition.
Right.
And you've still had momentum. You still have relationships, although with many coaching staffs turnover. I mean, how many high school coaches now consider Nebraska a prime destination for their player versus, mm-hmm. you know, the SEC?
Not many.
Almost anywhere in the SEC.
Yeah.
So you know, I don't know if there's any advantage. Yes, recent success is an advantage, but that turns over quickly.
Yeah.
And then you have successful college coaches going to the NFL, and then the coaching situation changes, and you're dealing with picking up the piece of recruiting class and who goes where, and somebody's going to transfer, somebody's going to the stability that was always there with the longevity of a coach or bedrock programs, it just that has crumbled. And makes college football a lot more exciting, but for people that were used to sitting on a high perch and enjoying it pretty much all the time, you know, that's the shifting sands have pulled that perch down.
Yeah. Well, it just, just to put some perspective for me, I went to my first Nebraska game when I was 4 years old. And I essentially grew up in Memorial Stadium. We've had season tickets since the 1970s. You know, my family bleeds Husker Red. And mm-hmm. I'm at the point now where I'm sick of it. I'm sick of every year there's expectations. The expectations are so unrealistically high that everybody then just turns on each other and they're all just mad at each other. And, you know, I want there to be peace. I don't want everybody to be mad at each other. I want it to be like it was when I was little.
Well, it only comes when people understand the new reality.
Yeah.
And the new reality is that, again, that type of dominance just it doesn't exist anymore, and it's not going to exist anymore in the future. I mean, unless, you know, who can say, what if we all have these power conferences or this and that?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you're like but at this point, the way the landscape is now, it's just not going to come back. And kudos to you for recognizing that, even though it's discouraging to say the least. The more people that can get that, the more people can just, yes, you get wrapped up in your team and you root for them and you get mad and you call for this. Why is this coach doing that? Blah, 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 blah. But you have the perspective that, look, every year is not going to be a national championship contending year like it used to be. And hasn't been for a long time. for a lot of teams. So I'm sorry for you, man.
It's okay.
We've talked a fair amount of Iowa and Nebraska on this podcast.
Yeah, now that we've gone through my little pity party, it's and everybody's turned off the podcast, who's going to win on Saturday?
Iowa State or Texas Tech?
Yeah.
I think the Cyclones cover for sure, and I wouldn't put it. Look, I guess I would give equal weight to them not covering versus winning, but I think they have a better chance. I mean, I think they have a decent chance to win.
Right, me too.
Particularly if the defense can finally force some turnovers. That's been a long time coming. It's been years since there were a team that really was proficient at taking the ball away. You need to do that on Saturday, and you need to do it, I would say, at least three times. If you do it, Sam Richardson could have his first 300-yard game of the year. Mike Warren continues to do it. Maybe other guys mixed in, whether it be Sam landing in some of those situations. I think they have a decent shot. I still can't pick against Tech in their place, but I think it should be a very entertaining and a good game, and I certainly hope it's not that Nut Cup-worthy type of game where it's close, hit and miss, and then you can point to a play or two near the end where it goes the other way. But I at this point, the pragmatist in me has to say Tech pulls it out. But I think the Cyclones put up a very, very good fight and continue to show some promise.
I think that it's good. I think Tech wins by a touchdown, but obviously if they win by a touchdown, it's a good game all throughout. And I would say that the mood will be positive coming out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think, how I think it'll be.
Yeah. The only way that it might not be is people will look then who's next.
Yeah.
And then start to think, okay, no matter how positive it was, just in terms of feeling progress, where everyone knows the most important by a huge margin of measure of progress is one loss record. You start to look then at where it sits potentially after the next 2 weeks, and maybe that good faith has evaporated a little bit. If, I know in some cases it has already, and quite a while ago. But I think they need a win. I think they very well could get a win. I think the guys are pumped and confident about getting a win. So I'll say from a selfish perspective of how I want to come in on Monday and cover a football team, you know what, I'm changing my mind. I think they upset them. They're going to upset them.
There you go.
Because it makes my life easier.
There we go. We got to get out of here, man.
Yeah, let's do it.
You've heard it here first. Rob Gray says Iowa State's going to pick an upset win over Texas Tech on Saturday.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have because people know
don't backpedal. Don't backpedal.
Although, I'm not doing that bad this season, but for a terrible week, so.
All right, for Rob Gray, I'm Jared Stansberry. Have a great week, everybody.